Hey, Anna, did you know that the sun and the moon almost seem like they're the same size in the sky?
Yeah, are they not? They're not. They're not the same size.
They're pretty
are they the same
close.
Size?
They're almost exactly the same. I mean, think of a full moon and then think of a sun. They're almost the exact same size. Isn't that weird?
It is weird because in real life, they're not.
Exactly. The sun is way bigger, but way farther away. So we're in this very unique spot here on Earth where the sun and moon seem the same size in the sky. Because that is like that is, then when the moon covers the sun, what do you get?
An eclipse?
Exactly.
Eclipse. Yes,
hey,
I got it.
You got it. Ding, 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 ding.
It's like a game show.
I know. It's amazing.
I'm into it.
Oh, man, I can't wait because we have a great eclipse coming up. So from the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory, where Dean is the astronomer and I am not. And in this episode, we'll start talking about the upcoming total solar eclipse with our guest, Michael Bakich from Astronomy Magazine.
So for astronomers and non-astronomers, the August total solar eclipse is really the highly anticipated event of recent memory. I mean, here we're going to have this total solar eclipse going across the United States. People from Oregon to South Carolina will be able to see the entire sun blocked out by the entire moon if you're on the right place at the right time. It's going to be super awesome. I can't wait.
I've never seen you or many of the astronomers and scientists that are involved in the observatory so excited about anything. But this is like really getting people jazzed.
I know. If we get a brand new telescope, this is kind of like that, except for this is huge. Like, I have been having this on my calendar August 21st, 2017, since I started at the observatory back in 2000. I mean, this was the day.
Oh, wow.
I put in my time off. I'm going on vacation. The bosses know that I'm not in that day.
Because they're not going to be in either.
Well, that's a good point.
Leaving.
Everybody's going to be gone.
That's right. Except for me. I think it's going to be fine. I'm staying here. I don't know, mostly going to be covered. It's fine. It's same.
It is the same, kind of, except for mine's going to be way cooler because I'm going to see the entire sun blocked out. Now, in places like Cincinnati and places that are not quite on the path of totality, you're going to see a partial solar eclipse. Only part of the sun is blocked out. So in Cincinnati, 90% is blocked out, which is pretty good. That's pretty good. The farther you are from that line, the less you get. But everybody in the United States will see a partial solar eclipse that day. So that is exciting. But to see the total eclipse, that might be something else.
Well, when somebody's put in their off time 17 years in advance, somebody's got to mind the store, Dean. So
I'll be dealing
with the partial eclipse, being very excited, and you guys will all be having a much cooler time.
Oh, we'll be having great adventures in Missouri and Tennessee and South Carolina.
So many exotic locations.
I know, very exotic.
So exciting.
That's true. So, but you found some kind of cool cultural references to total solar eclipses.
It's true. We were talking about the eclipse, and I found an article in National Geographic about, you know, culturally and historically, you know, how cultures explained eclipses. And I thought that it was interesting. In Vietnam, it's a toad. In Viking mythology, it's a wolf. But basically, it's an animal eating the sun is how they explained it.
Whoa.
In, you know, days gone by. And so I think this is very interesting. They would make a lot of noise, banging pots and pans or whatever, to try to make the eclipse stop.
Oh, yeah.
Like this is weird me out. What's happening? Knock it off.
Well, imagine that you're living there. You're living thousands of years
That's
ago.
Right.
And you're out farming. You're out
minding your business.
Raising the cattle or whatever you're doing, chopping wood. I don't know what you're doing.
Right.
Who knows? The only job I ever had is being an astronomer. So I don't know what other people actually do for jobs.
Chop wood and raise cattle, apparently.
So you're out there doing those jobs. And the sun just is gone. It disappears. You look
for
up
like
and the sun's
minute,
gone.
For like a minute, right? How long is it going to be?
Well, you don't know that. You see the sun is gone, and where is it gone? I mean, the wolf ate it or the toad ate it.
Let me tell you, if it's hot and the sun goes away, all I'm going to think is like, sweet, it's time for like a break. I'm just going to sit down somewhere.
But wouldn't you think the sun might never come back?
Yes. Fine. What I really think is interesting about this little bit of sort of history is that at the Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles, right?
Right. Right.
So the director there dresses as a wizard.
He
dresses as a wizard, and he leads a ritual during a lunar eclipse, not a solar eclipse, but a lunar eclipse, where he bangs pots and pans and tries to, you know. So I think next time,
I need
to
dress like a wizard.
We need to get you a wizard. Amazon it or something. We need to get a wizard costume.
I don't think I can pull it off, but. But if it does happen, and so people freak out, right? I mean, they freak out when the solar eclipse, and that's what I think is kind of interesting, is that they don't know what's happening, but they want to do whatever they can to get the sun back.
Yeah.
And the good news is it works, right? So they bang their pots and pans, and the sun comes back.
And they think that they did it. They made it happen.
Well, sure. It works
so
every time.
Exactly.
Because right? These solar eclipses are so precise. Like, it only happens for minutes, for you know, a couple seconds, up to the maximum total solar eclipse can be 7.5 minutes long. So you're banging your pots and pans long enough, the sun's going to come back.
Your arms are exhausted. You're like, any minute now, though, guys. Got to keep it up.
Oh, my gosh. Just a few more seconds.
That's right.
Bring it back out.
I did also like that there's another sort of... in the Navajo tradition, that they, I think, have a very lovely approach to the eclipse. They pause and observe that it's a very special occasion, and they think about the cosmic order of things, and then they run inside and they don't look at it. They don't eat, sleep, or drink until it's over.
They don't look at it?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
They're like, oh, cosmic order, you know, the grand, you know, scheme of things, and then I'm going to rush inside and, like, pretend like it didn't happen. They sing special songs.
Wow. And then the sun comes back again, too.
And then they're like, the special songs did it.
Wow. I mean, it's kind of, I guess I feel a little sad because, like, you want to look at this thing. You want to see this eclipse that doesn't happen
very
often.
Well, they don't, but
I know.
The collective you, right.
Exactly. Because this hasn't happened in the U.S. In a long time. In 38 years, we haven't had a solar eclipse in the mainland U.S., and now it's going to go from coast to coast. Whew, this is going to be exciting.
It's going to be crazy.
So we're definitely fortunate to have Michael Bakich, senior editor of Astronomy Magazine, and he's going to be joining us here for Looking Up. His book, Your Guide to the 2017 Total Solar Eclipse, is out, and it really covers everything a stargazer needs to know. All right. Well, Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Dean.
We are really excited about this eclipse coming up on August 21st. And I guess just give us a little overview of what we should expect.
Well, you can expect drama.
Drama.
all across the country. You know, in today's news, drama is, you know, an economic collapse, a visit from the Pope, or a political upheaval of some kind. This isn't like that. This is going to be the most viewed science event in history. It's going to be awesome. And, you know, starting now, people will start to hear it called America's eclipse, or the United States' eclipse, or the Great American Eclipse. Why? Do we have some priority on it? Actually, we do.
It's ours. We own this
That's
one, right?
The 48 states is the only land on Earth where the dark inner shadow of the moon, where the total eclipse will be, is going to fall. So it really is the Great American Eclipse.
Well, I mean, it is kind of drama. I mean, the sun disappears. That's pretty dramatic.
Oh, it's spectacular.
It sounds like something out of Shakespeare or you know, the Bible or something.
Right.
Or the Absolutely. Real Housewives of somewhere. That level drama.
If only they could incorporate that into a show.
You know? I know.
Right.
I don't think it would stick. I don't think it would take.
So the big question we were going to ask you is, okay, now Anna is going to stay in Cincinnati, where it's going to be a
what?
Night.
What?
Okay,
oh,
I was going to ease you into this,
Whoops.
Michael.
Sorry.
Wait a minute.
You know,
The four words I've lived by for the past 4 years, as I've spoken to, I don't know how many groups and people and written about this all over the place and done a podcast, the four words I live by, it's all about totality.
Mm-hmm. That's what I keep telling her.
I can't believe I was going to ease you into this question, Michael, of I'm the non-astronomer, I'm going to admit, in this sort of duo of Dean and I. And I just wonder, I mean, 90%, if I got a 90% on a test, I would be amped about it. So that seems pretty good. Is it not good enough?
Okay, let me take your 90% example.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so is that probably roughly the percentage that's going to happen in Cincinnati,
right?
Maybe even right at the observatory. You guys have figured it out.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what's the difference? I'm going to be in St. Joseph, Missouri. There are a lot of other sites cutting across the country from Oregon to South Carolina. What's going to be the difference between a 90% totality and a full total solar eclipse? Your sky will be 100,000 times brighter than mine.
Whoa.
What?
I'm not kidding.
100,000?
100,000 times as bright as mine. Here's how we work this out. During a total solar eclipse, during the total part, you know, the drama, if we want to call it that, the only thing that you see is the outer atmosphere of the sun. Astronomers call it the corona. Mm-hmm. Corona is actually a Latin word. It means beer. No,
yeah.
Wait a minute.
I know it.
Yeah, that's not right. It means crown.
No, crown.
Okay, crown.
So this is the sun's crown.
See, we believed you on that.
That's
one,
right.
Michael.
I was like, oh,
that sounds. A lot of people do. That sounds reasonable.
So the face of the sun, the normal face of the sun, is 1 million times brighter than the corona. That's why we never see it except during totality.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have a 90% eclipse, which means that 10% of the sun is still going to be visible. So your sky is still going to be 100,000 times brighter than anybody under the moon's dark inner shadow.
I'm sold.
What do you think? Did you do it?
Yeah.
Did
you
do it?
I'm going to make some plans. I'm a little late, I guess, to the game here.
Well, sorry, everybody. You're the only one staying at the observatory.
I know. Who's going to watch the observatory if we're all gone, though, is the question.
Well, some people may need to stay in Ohio, you know, for legal reasons.
That's true.
It's not a parole situation.
So, you know,
I just thought 90%.
That's all you've got.
That's a good point.
Know, I mean, 90% is cool if that's all you've got. But, oh, my goodness, you're so close to the region in Kentucky and southern Illinois, you know, where it's total, not only total, but it's the longest duration of totality down by Carbondale, Illinois, and Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
Right.
You're so close. I mean, it's a crying shame that you're gonna be in Cincinnati for it. And I love Cincinnati. I really did. I went to Ohio State as an undergrad.
Oh, okay.
And visited Cincinnati many times, saw a lot of baseball games there, saw some football games there. Yeah, I love
Cincinnati.
So you're
just saying on this one day.
On this one day.
That's correct.
Not that life in Cincinnati is abysmal.
That's
it's
correct.
Just to see.
And a lot of other places in the United States.
Yes, right. There you go. And in your article, didn't you say something like 40% of Americans are going to be within 300 miles of the path of totality?
Right. Two out of every five U.S. citizens is within a 300-mile drive. You know, 300 miles on the interstate is like 4 hours. That's nothing. You know, the big question that everybody has is, well, okay, I'm doing an event in St. Joseph. Somebody else is doing an event in Casper, Wyoming. Somebody else is doing an event in Salem, Oregon. Nobody has any clue how many people are going to show up.
That's a good point.
No clue at all. So that's kind of exciting. It's also kind of scary, especially if you work for emergency services or something like that. I mean, nobody in the zone of totality who is a police officer or a doctor or a nurse or anybody like that in some associated field or a firefighter is allowed that day off. They're all going to work, and probably even people that weren't scheduled to work.
Well, so this is our first one we've had in the mainland U.S. in a long time. That is one of my worries, is the traffic jams and things. I mean, what do you think is going to happen in this age of, everybody's online and they get their Twitter feed that morning and say there's an eclipse happening, drive. I mean, do you think it's going to be a crazy day?
I don't refer to it as traffic. I call it gridlock.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's, let me give you a popular reference. It's going to be similar to a zombie apocalypse, except it's going to be worse. And why do I say that? Because zombies don't need food. They don't need fuel. They don't need good roads. They don't need health care. They don't need lodging. They don't need any of those things that real people do. So it really is going to be worse than a zombie apocalypse.
But they do like brains, and astronomers astronomers have brains. I'm a little worried.
They do need food, just other people are their food.
Well, do you remember, so we had a lunar eclipse, supermoon lunar eclipse a couple years ago. And it was like that at the observatories. They had to park down the street, and it was like zombies walking down the street, like, where is the eclipse?
I mean, a friend of mine wrote a story for Astronomy Magazine about that.
Oh, that sounds kind of vaguely familiar.
Yeah, I bet it does. Nicely done. By the way,
I think we had a little argument about supermoon versus non-supermoon. Well, now the other thing I was going to ask is you've seen quite a few of these total solar eclipses, right?
I have been to 13. I've seen 12.
You're 12 or 13? Wow.
And this is all over the world?
All over the world.
Wow.
Yeah, because the last one in the U.S. was in February 1979. And that was way up in the Northwest. I was actually in a Dodge Maxi van with my head out the window, driving down the highway at about 90 miles an hour, looking for a clear spot, which I finally found about 20 minutes before totality. And so I did actually see that one, but that was an adventure.
And I heard that was the really cold one, wasn't it? It was like winter.
Yeah, that was in
frozen.
February. I know, it was like 5 degrees outside, you know, and I've got my head out the window. You know, it didn't care. The adrenaline was so strong. It was just, you know, it could have been 30 below and I wouldn't have noticed it.
So, well, what's your viewing tips for first timers? So if this is their first total solar eclipse, what would you recommend?
I have one overarching main tip. Don't try to photograph this eclipse. Okay? Because why, when everything is happening in the sky above you, why would you be looking down and fumbling with a camera?
Mm-hmm.
And look, no offense to your listeners and their photographic skills, but, you know, I'll speak to them directly. You, with your off-the-shelf DSLR or, you know, point-and-shoot camera or, heaven forbid, cell phone, are probably not going to get the shot that's going to make it into Astronomy Magazine. So,
but it would make it onto my Instagram.
Well, you could,
a selfie with the eclipse sounds—I don't know—pretty next level.
Somebody else's picture.
That's right.
Minutes, I mean,
Photoshop
the maximum length of totality is 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
Oh wow!
Think about that. It goes like that. I mean, it's so incredibly fast. Don't photograph it.
Okay.
There'll be plenty of pictures afterward that you can share and marvel at. You know, I'm going to be with people that have seen, one person has seen 18 total solar eclipses. He's going to photograph it. Great. You know, he's experienced it. He knows what to do. And actually, even in his case, he's automating most of it so that he you know, step back and watch the spectacle in the sky. So that is my overarching piece of advice. And that comes from, I'm the photo editor of the, you know, biggest circulation magazine about astronomy on Earth.
Yep.
So, I'm just saying.
That's right. Photographers, send your letters to Michael Bakich,
right?
Care of Astronomy Magazine.
Please do.
So you mentioned 12 out of 13. You had one cloudy one. What happened? How did it sit with you?
Well, you know, it was a chance that we took. This was the 2009 eclipse in China, and I had a chance to be the quote unquote astronomer on three cruises or over land. And my wife and I talked about it, and we said, you know, how often really are we going to get to China? Mm-hmm. So we took the land, you know, trip, which was about a 50% chance weather-wise, and we saw the sun up to about 2 minutes before totality.
Oh, no.
And then it rained like I had never seen rain before. It was crazy. People were running out, covering their telescopes with anything they could find.
Oh, man.
And but, you know, don't feel bad for us, because we got to climb the Great Wall. We got to interact with the pandas. We saw the Shan warriors. We did so much cool stuff in China that, okay, if I had to miss one, I'm okay with that.
Right. I mean, that's the thing about when you're an eclipse chaser. You get to get a great vacation no matter what. You get to see these other places of the world. And
right. I give you another example. In the year before that, in 2008, we were in Russia. And during the tour, I was standing in Red Square in Russia. Now, when I was a kid, if you would have said, Michael, you're going to command a submarine, I would have said, great, you're going to be an astronaut, right. I would have said, great. But if you would have told me when I was a kid that I was actually going to stand in Red Square in Russia, I would have said, impossible. Never happen. And it just shows how the world can and does change. And that was a pretty big thrill.
Oh, yeah. I mean, isn't it cool? I mean, I don't know if you're amazed by all the places astronomy has taken you in your life. You know, it's just, we feel so lucky that, you know, that we're part of this, I think.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed.
Well, so I've got my my gotcha question from your colleague, David Eicher, the editor of Astronomy Magazine. I asked him, can we ask you do we have any dirt on you? And Dave said, just ask him about Norwegian black metal. I have no idea what that is.
Is it music or is it like a, I'm thinking
it's
like.
It's music.
And what's your connection to Norwegian black metal?
So if you ask people, what's your favorite music? Some people would say jazz, and some people would say blues, and some people would say contemporary rock, and some people would say classic rock. When you ask me what's my favorite type of music, I say extreme metal.
Uh-huh.
And so extreme metal is, I mean, it divides really into three types of sub-genres. One is something called death metal. Another is something called grindcore, and the third is black metal, which originated in Norway. And it's just a very energetic type of music that, you know, it's kind of like a total solar eclipse. Very few people have enjoyed total solar eclipses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very few people also enjoy my type of music.
I see. Yeah, because I can picture you in St. Joseph, Missouri. You have the boombox set up on the top of your...
No. There won't be any boombox because I'm actually going to be broadcasting live simulcast on four radio stations.
Whoa. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, which is really cool because, you know, we were worried about, you know, setting up some sound system at the airport there. You know, and it's going to be pretty inadequate for the number of people we're expecting. But now anybody with, you know, a cell phone or a tablet or even a transistor radio can just tune in to one of the stations and you'll be able to hear, you know, facts about the eclipse and timings and things like that. Yeah, it was an elegant solution.
Well, this is awesome. It's been great talking with you. I think you've convinced Anna to skip work that day. And,
please, maybe. Call in sick. I'll fake a doctor's note
Ooh.
For you.
An astronomer's note.
That's what I need. I like it.
And we've been enjoying, so you wrote that article in Astronomy Magazine's July edition about the 19 big eclipse surprises. We'll let people check that out. And then your guide to the 2017 total solar eclipse is out as well.
Indeed.
Available in local bookstores and online. Well, this has been great. We're so glad to be talking to you, and good luck at the eclipse. We can't wait. Clear skies to you on August 21st.
Well, Dean and Anna, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Oh, we've been talking to Michael Bakich from Astronomy Magazine, and he's also the author of Your Guide to the 2017 Total Solar Eclipse, available at your local bookstore and online.
So the Cincinnati Observatory has been around since the mid-1800s, so you can only imagine the letters of all kinds that we've received in that history. And some have very interesting theories or sights or things that they think they might have seen in the sky. So, Dean, you know, you get a lot of these, so you got. Why don't you share an example of something like this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've got a more modern one to start off with.
All right.
And this is one of the most common things that we get. So we call this the crank file.
That's right.
When we get these very odd questions. And so the most common one I get is UFO sightings. And you think in 2017, people are still looking for UFOs and still hoping that they see them. So
I happen to believe all these.
You do.
The UFOs, I think, you're just being...
We're hiding the truth.
The truth is out there.
The truth is out there. That's true. but it's not quite as Fox Mulder-y as you might think.
Well.
But anyway, and actually now that I've been doing this for so long and I get all these UFO questions, I do relate more to Mulder's boss, Skinner. I really do. I've just come to realize that he was the hero of the show.
Oh, my gosh.
But anyway.
That is not the point of that show, but whatever.
But back to the crank file question.
Yes.
So a few years ago, somebody brought in a video that their son took of a UFO up in the sky. And he called me up, actually called first and said, I've got this video of UFO. You guys have to check it out because I'm going to send it to the newspapers. I'm going to send it to to TV, and it's going to be everywhere. And
he offered you an exclusive.
He did. He offered me the exclusive. So I was like, oh, sure. And you got it on video? Bring it in. That's great. So he brought it in on a DVD and or CD. And then he said, oh, you want to watch it now? I was like, well, I'll look at it a little later. I didn't want him like looking over my shoulder.
While you laughed and rolled your eyes.
Exactly. So I played the video and it was very intriguing. I was like, well, there's some weird lights. He's sitting, the kid is sitting in the car. He's got this video camera. He's aiming up there. There's these lights that are moving and they're moving in weird ways. I still wasn't sold. I was like, well, something's going on here. And the lights only moved when he moved the camera.
Okay.
So I thought, there's got to be a
How
camera
How many lights are we talking?
Well, so there are a couple of them. They kind of came, and then they were red, and then they disappeared, and then they were white, and then they disappeared. Then there are three or four of them in a row, and then they disappeared. And so when the three or four came up, then I said, wait a second. That was on the ground earlier. He was filming the ground, and there were four on the ground, but they were up in the sky, too, in reverse. And so I figured out... He was filming inside the car and was getting the reflection off the windshield of the lights, and he captured them on the thing. So here I have to do is email this guy, this father, to tell him this and say that this is not a UFO.
Thank God you didn't watch it there with him.
I know, exactly, exactly.
Is this for real, dude?
Exactly. So I said, well, if you look on, the second 37, you'll notice that those lights up in the sky are the lights on the ground. And so he just filmed the dashboard lights. and so the father writes me back. He says, how stupid do you think my son is that he can't tell the difference between that? And so I wrote back.
He really went all in.
I know. So I wrote back. I was like, I'm not commenting on that. I'm just telling you the truth. So usually we get these and I have to be the downer and tell them, no, it's not a UFO. You're not going to be famous and all this stuff. And you never hear back from him.
Right.
But I heard back from him. He wrote back a week later and said, I drove out to that spot where my son recorded. I made him come with me and I made him show me exactly what he did. And there were those four lights on the ground and there they were reflected on the windshield. And I smacked the kid on the back of his head. And he said, thank you for saving me the embarrassment of sending this video.
Oh, my gosh.
It had a happy ending. I never get those. It's always like.
You're usually crushing dreams left and right about UFOs and all kinds. Yeah.
I know. When I break the bad news that they didn't find UFOs. But he was so thankful. And I actually ran into him not too long ago.
Did you really?
And he said, do you remember the guy that brought you that video on the DVD? And I was like, oh, yeah. I remember that one. That was a good one.
Oh, man.
So next time we'll try to pull some files from the crank file from a long time ago and see some kind of weird theories of stuff that people have. But UFO ones are definitely still in popularity. it's still in vogue right now.
Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks again to Michael Bockage for joining us. And get in touch with us. We're on Twitter at Looking Up Podcast. Or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
Ask us a question, give us a topic suggestion, or ask your kids what they'd like to ask an astronomer or scientist, and we'll answer it on a future episode.
And remember to subscribe to Looking Up on iTunes or from wvxu.org. Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, and Josh Elstro is our engineer.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.